Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 9, Chapter 18, King Yayati Regains His Youth, Text Number 23. Yayatir anabhi pretam daiva parita atmanaha vanastu tadgatam bhutva prati jagraha tadvachaha yayatu yayati king yayati anavi pretam not liked daiva uparitam brought about by providential arrangements Atmanaha, his personal interest. Manaha, mind. To, however, Tadgatam, being attracted to her. Bhutva, by such intelligence. Pratijagraha, accepted. Tatpachaha, the words of Devayani. Translation of purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Shukadeva Goswami continued, because such a marriage is not sanctioned by regular scriptures, King Yayati did not like it. But because it was arranged by Providence, because he was attracted by Devayani's beauty, he accepted her request. Purport. According to the Vedic system, parents would consider the horoscopes of the boy and girl who were to be married. According to her astrological calculations, the boy and girl were compatible in every respect. The match was called Yogtaka, and the marriage would be accepted. Even 50 years ago, the system was current in Hindu society. Regardless of the affluence of the boy or the personal beauty of the girl, without this astrological compatibility, the marriage would not take place. A person is born in one of the three categories, known as Devagana, Manushagana, and Rakshashagana. Different parts of the universe, there are demigods and demons. In human society also, some people resemble demigods, where others resemble demons. According to astrological calculations, there was a conflict between a godly and a demoniac nature, the marriage would not take place. Similarly, there were calculations of pratiloma and anuloma. The central idea is that if the boy and girl were on equal level, the marriage would be happy, whereas inequality would lead to unhappiness. Because care is no longer taken in marriage, we now find many divorces. Indeed, divorce has now become a common affair, although formerly one's marriage would continue lifelong. And the affection between husband and wife was so great that the wife would voluntarily die when her husband died, or would remain a faithful widow throughout her entire life. Now, of course, this is no longer possible. Human society has fallen to the level of animal society. Marriage now takes place simply by agreement. Dampatye bi ruchir hetu. The Bhagavatam 12:2-3. The word abiruchi means agreement. If the boy and girl simply agree to marry, the marriage takes place. When the Vedic system is not rigidly observed, marriage frequently ends in divorce. Yatir anabhi pretam daivo parita atmanaha manas tu tadgatam bhutva prati jagraha tadvachaha. Shukadeva Goswami continued, because such a marriage is not sanctioned by regular scriptures, King Yayati did not like it. But because it was arranged by Providence, because he was attracted by Devayani's beauty, he accepted her request. especially the ninth canto, deals a lot about men and women and their relationship to each other. Of course, this is leading up to the tenth canto, where these relationships are there, but the relationship between Krishna and his devotees becomes paramount. But what the main lesson here is that even if you go to the highest planets in this universe or have the highest positions in this material place that we are, still one can never find satisfaction. As Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Nasti buddhya yuktasya, nacha yuktasya bhavanaha, nacha bhavyantak shantir, ashantasya kutak sukham. Therefore, one who is not in the divine consciousness or Krishna consciousness can have neither controlled mind nor a steady intelligence, without which there can be no possibility of peace, and how can there be any happiness without peace? In other words, if our minds are not satisfied, and if we don't see things properly, then we can't be peaceful. Namely, if we think ourselves to be this body, or think others to be their body or minds, and if we see like that, then we won't know what to do in order to actually satisfy our minds, because naturally we'll try to satisfy our senses and our whimsical, well, our minds, which can't be satisfied materially. Just like the fish out of the water, doesn't matter how much he tries to find satisfaction outside the water, he can't. So unless one becomes convinced with one's intelligence that the only way I can actually be satisfied is to become conscious of Krishna. And in order to do that, I have to enter into the mood of Krishna consciousness. That is devotion to Krishna. As soon as we stop devotion to Krishna, then immediately we're devoted to something in the material world, which is considered to be the Tevidu Swarthagatim Hi Vishnu. People don't know that they'll be happy if they become conscious of Krishna. Dharashya ye bahir artamanina. And therefore they take something insignificant. Tish, as Prahlad Maharaj said, even the highest material experience, which is sex life, Prahlad Maharaj compares it to rubbing of two hands together. Kandudivat manistijam manasajetaha. Yanmai tunadi grihamedi sukham hiti tucham. Kanduyanena ivaduka dukha. Kariyar ivaduka dukha. It's compared to the rubbing of two hands together to relieve an itching sensation. But that's glorified throughout the whole universe. The whole universe is full of love stories. And the Bhagavatam is full of love stories too. We've just gone through Purava and Urvashi. Such a love story. Certainly lasts longer than the usual love stories on this planet. And as a matter of fact, he even goes to another planet to be with her. So how romantic. But it's always winding up the same thing. Ultimately, if we follow the story here of King Yayati and Devayani and Sarmishta, because they were cultured and regulated in their sex life, therefore, after a while, they get bored and they realize that this is not the ultimate happiness, and they gave it up and became Krishna conscious. On the other hand, if one is not regulated in one's sex life or in any kind of sense gratification, then one will get perhaps a temporary satisfaction when the senses are temporarily satisfied. Therefore, the mind feels peaceful, and that's called bliss. But then one, as it says, if you pour water, ghee on a fire, enough oil or ghee on the fire, the fire will temporarily go out, but then it'll blaze up even more. So one may temporarily feel some satisfaction by rubbing hands together to relieve an itching sensation, but after one stops, then the itching comes back even more stronger. Until, as Prabhupada said, then there's blood. So this is not the ultimate solution to our problem of dissatisfaction. Trying to find some satisfaction, some happiness, some relief from the itching sensation, some peace of mind, so that one thinks that once I get peace of mind, then I can get happiness. But the peace of mind can never come in the material world, because we have to die, for one thing. And everything is ultimately an attempt to avoid death, which is inevitable. So even though we're trying very hard to find peace, satisfaction, we're making so many arrangements every day, we eat properly, hopefully, we get up, we do so many things to maintain the body, but still it grows old, comes disease, and dies, no matter what we do. And therefore, one can never be peaceful, because all our attempts will be ultimately unsuccessful. Doesn't matter how exalted we become, how learned we become, how talented we become, in order to avoid death, which is the ultimate objective of any materialist, everyone dies anyhow. The pauper dies, the king dies, the Olympic gold medalist dies, the person who can't even tie his shoes dies, everyone dies. So no matter how talented, opulent, strong, how exalted we may be in the eyes of others, we have to leave this body anyhow and go on to our next body, either spiritual and material. And even if we enjoy like the demigods or like Yati with Devayani, ultimately it's seen as frustrating and one has to give it up. And hopefully in the case of Yati, because he was a cultured person and his wife was cultured, therefore they took up Krishna consciousness. So the idea of the story is, why go through all the frustration, all the attempts to avoid death, because it's all going to be a failure. Why not just take up Krishna consciousness and be prepared to leave this body to get a spiritual one? Why not try to do that? Rather than do the same thing everyone is doing, and everyone gets the same result, though ultimately a failure. Neither they get spiritual life, nor do they get a happy material life, they just get problems. But in the meantime, as explained here, marriage is there because we can't realize, everyone, we can't realize the uselessness of sense gratification unless we maintain our intelligence. So unrestricted sex life, unrestricted sense gratification takes away our intelligence, so we never discovered that the reason why we're frustrated, the reason why we're unhappy and unsatisfied, is because of unrestricted sense gratification. Because one's intelligence is taken away by one who has unrestricted sense gratification. Therefore, one doesn't understand that. One thinks the problem, Maya will tell one, is that you don't have enough of it. You don't have enough sex life. You haven't eaten enough. You haven't slept enough. You need more and more and more. And Maya will put us in a delusion to reconfirm our illusion. Illusion reconfirms illusion until one comes in contact with persons who have more elevated knowledge than one has. And if one fortunately takes their instruction, then one may get some higher understanding of things. And here it explains that marriages should be compatible. Lo and behold, even the Bhagavatam talks about marriage. It doesn't condemn marriage, because ordinarily people need marriage in the material world in order to get free from the conception that they need marriage. which is quite strong. I mean, marriage means that one requires the help of someone, an assistant in some way. So that's everyone in the material world, generally, one requires that unless one is independently strong in Krishna consciousness. Or has enough experience to understand that the amount of trouble you have to go through, especially in Kali Yuga, to maintain a household life is quite a big distraction, and will mean that one will have to, one's consciousness will necessarily be diverted from concentrating purely or wholly in Krishna consciousness. There's too many distractions. But still, for an ordinary person, they're not, if they give up marriage, they're not going to fix their mind on Krishna anyhow. They'll simply run around with a number of ladies or men rather than actually fixing the mind on Krishna. So better to fix one's mind on one person and then discover that one needs more than simply marriage life in the material world. One also needs Krishna along with the marriage life. One has to do it in Krishna consciousness. And in order to do that, one should not be so distracted in marriage life that one is seeking the satisfaction that one was hoping for in marriage life and not finding it at all. There is happiness in material life, however insignificant it might be, but for a person who is not in Krishna consciousness, it's very significant, the happiness in material life, because it's the only happiness. Therefore, some compatible relationship should be there, because the husband should be a protector and the wife should be an assistant, and they should together work to become conscious of Krishna and bring up their children in Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, you may have the most compatible relationship, so they both go to hell together. That's not the idea of finding compatibility, that now we're compatible together and we can both go to the darkest regions of existence, but at least we'll be together there. That's not the idea. The idea is that when there's compatibility, then one can think about the higher cause of life, Krishna consciousness. So Prabhupada simplifies it here. There's something called kutas. Kutas means that there's 32 aspects of compatibility, 32 points one can get. Actually, there's a number of different calculations according to kutas, which include many, many things, such as if the two families will be compatible with each other, your dynasties are compatible, if you're mentally compatible, if you're physically compatible, if after getting married, your partner will get into trouble, or you'll get into trouble, how many children, if you actually have, how many children you want, etc., etc. And here it mentions Rakshasa, Manusha, and Deva. So this is just one of them, an important one, because obviously our acharyas have mentioned it. But nowadays, just because you have a moon in a nakshatra, which is a Deva nakshatra, doesn't make people godly nowadays. There's too many other factors. Although the moon, our minds, are very important, whether you say in astrology or just in reality, the moon is very important. Because it's our moon that actually, it's our minds who are actually pushing us. We may think we're very intellectual, but actually when the biggest intellect, when he sees nice ice cream and pizza, his heart melts. When he sees the opposite sex, an attractive person from the opposite sex, then immediately he loses all his intelligence, no matter how intellectual he may be. So what's pushing us is our mind, our feelings, our desire, thinking, feeling, and willing, especially thinking and then feeling. Because we want to feel good. No one wants, everyone, happy means you feel good. No one is spending their life trying to figure out how to feel bad. Although that comes along with the territories, they say. But that takes intelligence in order to do that, and therefore one should make arrangements in such a way as not unnecessarily to put one into difficulty. So a certain amount of arrangement should be there. You don't want to match up with someone who wants five children and you don't like children. Someone who wants to live in a palace and you prefer a hut. Someone who wants to travel around the world and you like to stay in one place. Obviously, as soon as such a relationship starts, there's going to be conflict. There'll be love, romance for a couple of months or something, and then the reality hits in, and then one has other needs, one has to satisfy also. Therefore, in the Veda culture, men and women didn't just fall in love, generally speaking, unless they were very high class, and then get married. The parents would take care of it, because they know, as now, people become infatuated. And because they have no experience, they have no idea about the consequences of simply following whimsically one's infatuation, how much distress it'll bring, how much waste of time will bring. Therefore, the parents who were cultured, had more wisdom, would actually make arrangements so that they find a compatible match. And part of that compatible match is that they should have similar interests. If you have a servant mentality, it's necessary to be with someone else who has the same service mentality. If one likes to take care of cows and protect them and farm, of course, obviously, you want a farmer, not a kshatriya on your farm. He doesn't do any farming, he just stands guard at your door every night. You can't get any food because your husband won't work, he's a kshatriya. So the whole family is very skinny, but they're safe. That wouldn't be very compatible. No, you want someone who's, if you're kshatriyas, you have to rule over a kingdom. You don't want a wife who wants to milk the cows during the sacrifice. She also has to participate. But nowadays, no one's doing anything. Everyone is just trying to get enough money by hook or crook just to fill the stomach up. But still, there are subtleties, even now, because it hasn't all become one. Therefore, there are interests. Some people are more intellectual. Some people are more managerial. Some people are more into the mood of gaining resources. And some people just want to serve, assist. So that is there, and it's better that the couple is compatible, that the husband has a certain attitude, certain mood, a certain purpose of life, and the wife is an assistant. Or, nowadays, of course, maybe the wife has a certain purpose or mood or whatever, and the husband's assistant. Because that's Kali Yuga. But somehow or another, they're compatible, and, of course, for Krishna consciousness, they're compatible so that they can happily peacefully live together, and pursue devotional service. They don't get distracted. And therefore they can make progress to the point where they realize that actually they're a Krishna servant, the wife, the husband is Krishna servant, everyone is Krishna servant, and therefore there's no problem. Wherever they are, they don't have to have a certain house. They can go on pilgrimage wherever they are. Everyone is Krishna's servant, and therefore they don't miss simply their own little kingdoms. They've expanded their consciousness so they see the whole world as Krishna's kingdom, rather than trying to just create their own kingdom and have their own little kingdom with Krishna there. They see the whole world as Krishna's kingdom. And eventually they can understand that this world is not my world. I don't belong here. No one really belongs here. And therefore they can actually become renounced. So household life is, for most people, is necessary to learn certain lessons, and it should be learned in a way that's peaceful, that they can go on happily, peacefully together or happily together, bring up their children in Krishna consciousness, and do something for Krishna as householders, and then progress towards seeing this world as Krishna's kingdom, and eventually seeing it's not my kingdom and I don't belong here. I should go back to the spiritual world. And both husband and wife, if they go through the process, they both reach maturity and they come to that conclusion. And there's no compatibility, they spend their life fighting with each other or a short marriage, and they go looking for their soulmate, which they can never find, and therefore lament for the rest of their lives, hanker and lament. Then at the end of life, they seem to come back, hopefully as human beings, or perhaps not so fortunate. They've performed too many sinful activities, and they just wasted another human form of life. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Unfortunately, in ISKCON, even in ISKCON, generally speaking, when devotees want to get married, they first fall in love, and then they go to the astrologer to confirm it. That is actually love. Very arranged marriages in ISKCON is also not very common. And therefore, at least if they're devotees, if they're trying to become devotees, they can, even if the relationship is not perfect, they can still tolerate it. Not that at least inconvenience, then the least incompatibility, then immediately there's divorce and we separate, find our other divine couple. Any questions, comments? Kuala Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.